Good afternoon. It is Eric Scott on WASR. Thank you very much for listening today. I know normally on a Friday we have Senator Jeb Bradley, but this one I was able to, she's obviously a very busy person and had to schedule when we could. And you've seen it on Facebook. We've talked about it on air. Nikki Hanna is with us. She is from Wolfboro, for those of you who don't know, and is a contestant right now on Hell's Kitchen 19, which runs on Fox. Nikki, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Eric. I'm really excited to do this. I love talking to anybody involved with Wolfboro things of all kinds, my favorite place.
Well, you must have had quite a few press opportunities as a Hell's Kitchen contestant. And I do appreciate you taking the time to speak to a station in Wolfboro.
Of course. I mean, yeah, things, really, a lot of the stuff that's happened, people have sort of done without any type of permission. Like, I find articles about myself that it looks like I interviewed for, but I never did. So, but yeah, there's been people who reached out. But like I said, I'm happy to do anything Wolfboro and New Hampshire related as a priority, just because it's my home.
Now, you graduated Kingswood?
I did in 2011.
Good for you. Congratulations. And you were working at Wolf's Tavern. So let me start at the beginning. Were you always interested in food, or was it something that developed as maybe you got older?
I always wanted to be a chef when I was young. When I was a kid, I said I wanted to go to Johnson & Wills, and I wanted to be a chef and, own a hotel. I also wanted to be, like, an interior designer and, like, all sorts of other stuff. So I was like, oh, I'll just get a hotel, and then I'll do everything. And then as I got older, that dream, I guess, became less feasible, and I sort of got sidetracked and went into my other career, which was working in human services, but I always was cooking sort of through that whole experience. And then I got my friend Noah worked at the Wolf's Tavern, and I was, looking to get a side job to make some extra money, and I took a job as a prep cook there, and then I never turned back. I loved it. I never wanted to leave, so I didn't.
Tell me about those first couple of weeks as a new prep cook. And as you're discovering, hey, this is really, really cool. Can you kind of walk us through how that feels, learning the very basics?
It's obviously, I think most people know the basics of cooking, and I was privy to that, and I'm also a pretty quick learner. But I think the culture shock of just walking into, like, you don't know what it's like to work in a professional kitchen until you've done it. So I really had no idea that the culture and the atmosphere was going to be as I guess to me it was like intoxicating, and like I felt at home instantly and at ease. And the executive chef there at the time, Hope Wilson, was incredibly supportive, and it felt really comfortable, and I had never felt that way in a job before. And then interacting with food all day and using all of your senses and creating essentially all day long, I just knew. I was like, this is home. I never want to leave. I'm going to do this forever.
So the next question you could probably anticipate is, how did you hook up with Fox? And also, by the way, Marissa Reams is with us from Fox Television, to handle any questions that Nikki, may not be able to answer about Fox or about the show itself. But tell me how you got together.
I didn't do anything. I got a random Facebook message from one of the casting people for ITV, which is, I believe, the parent company of Fox, or one of their casting people just messaged me out of the blue on Facebook. And I still, to this day, I have no idea why or how they found me or what made them decide to reach out, or I have no clue. That has continued to be a mystery to me this whole time. I thought it was a scam at first. I was like, okay, somebody's trying to kidnap me. What am I going to do? Like, they're trying to put me on a plane and send me to Las Vegas. But my mom was like, just try it, just respond, you know, just read it and see if it's real. And it turned out to be very, very real.
So tell me about arriving in Las Vegas. I mean, you find out you made the cut, you're jumping around, you're going, you know, this is fantastic. And then you arrive in Vegas. Now, you know, you have to remember, folks, that, you know, a lot of us love Hell's Kitchen, but it's television. And with editing techniques and all kinds of things, we don't always get the full experience, of course. So, like I said, give me an idea of walking into this place for the first time. Were you, like, nervous, scared, apprehensive, all of the above?
Definitely all of the above. It was, I guess, walking up to where we filmed, because you see in the first episode that they sort of led us to believe that we were going to get on a plane and fly to Los Angeles.
Yeah, so that was priceless.
The outside you see is like this airplane hangar, essentially, like a small airplane hangar. And then we walk in, and that is inevitably ends up being the set of that's where we stayed, that's where the dorms were, that's where we filmed, that's the restaurant. So that was shocking because we had no idea, you know, your initial, you look at it and you say, okay, we're getting on an airplane. And then you go inside and you're like, oh no, we're staying here, literally right here in this spot for the duration of filming. You know, this is it. We've arrived.
Sure.
So it kind of, it almost like took away the opportunity to be nervous because we were deliberately misled into, you know, thinking that this was just a stepping stone, but it turned out like we ran the whole marathon and now we're actually here. Surprise.
It is something else. Nikki Hannah is with us, and she is a contestant right now on Hell's Kitchen 19, which is on, actually was on, as we record this on Thursday. It airs Thursday nights, 8 o'clock, I believe, on Fox. Marissa, is that correct? 8 o'clock?
8 p.m. on Fox.
Yep. I never check because my TiVo gets it. So I never really pay attention.
And for those who don't have cable, it is on Hulu on Friday nights after it airs on Fox. It goes right onto Hulu the next day.
Oh, okay. Great. So it's another way for you to watch it. Give me a little bit of difference about, or not a difference, pardon me, but you put that first plate in front of Chef Ramsay. And did your life flash before your eyes or what happened?
It's so weird. And even when I just first saw him in person, I was like, is he real? Like, you don't realize that you're going to be that starstruck, I guess. And he's probably the most famous person I've ever been around in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see him, first of all, you know, forget the plate and anything else, just him being literally within reach, you kind of want to like reach out and grab him to make sure that he's real. But then you know, after a little while, you sort of get over that, and then you start seeing him as you know, your mentor for the moment when you're in that situation. So him tasting our food obviously was always nerve-wracking because he is the decision maker and sort of the end all be all of, you know, if we get to stay in the competition or not. So it was always scary. But the first one was probably the worst.
I can imagine. One question I've always wanted to ask is, you know, we all go out to dinner. Well, not as much anymore with the pandemic, but a lot of us still do. And support your local restaurant if you can, by the way. So
absolutely.
When I go to a restaurant or when I get delivery or whatever, the order is very, very rarely wrong. Why is it that on Hell's Kitchen, all these experienced chefs can't seem to get it right? Is it the pressure? Is it just, again, great editing that one out of 50 orders gets screwed up and that's the one we see on TV?
It is, I think, a combination of a lot of those things, but I think the main thing is that people maybe don't consider while they're watching is that most restaurants in America run on an American line system, and we don't normally work in brigades unless you're in a very high-end fine dining restaurant who's going sort of the brigade system is a French system, and it's totally different. So first of all, the majority of us have never done that before. We normally would like bring a whole dish, like I cook the sides, I cook the meat, I do the whole thing. Whereas in a brigade system, you're cooking one component to the dish, and then the people around you are cooking the rest of it. All of those components walk up to the chef at the pass, and he puts them together. So it requires a great deal more communication, which brings me to my second note, which is we never met each other. We've never worked with each other. We've never, you know, there's a lot of factors, and, you know, you go to a restaurant and you get your food quickly and it's correct, but that's a team that's been working together and, you know, knows their menu and didn't learn their menu 30 minutes ago. And then gets thrown into it. So we, you know, the first dinner service, I'll just use that as an example. We learned the menu 1 hour before we went in. We're brand new people. We're working in a brand new system. We're working for Chef Ramsay. Like, it's a lot. And I think, so, you know, they do have a tendency to sort of, and you can read the comments and people say all the time, like, oh, these people aren't real chefs. They don't know how to do blah, blah, blah. But I would challenge anybody who has that mindset to, like, why don't you do it? Why don't you give it a try? It's not as it seems. It's not as simple as you'd think.
I can imagine. Being a chef is a stressful job. The hours tend to suck. I mean, yeah, you can make a good living at it, and there's currently a shortage of good line cooks around. This is something that you want to, well, let me put it another way. How far do you want to take it? Do you want to have your own restaurant? Do you want to be an executive chef? Do you want to have a line of frozen food products? All of the above?
I want to be an executive chef first. And then I think that my goal right now, because, you know, granted, at the time of the show, I was 2 years in. I'm now 4 years into the industry. And I've been really blessed to make it pretty far in such a short amount of time, which I'm really thankful for. But there's still a lot that I want to learn. So right now I'm focusing on just exploring sort of all the avenues of what it means to run a restaurant so that I can move forward and make decisions like, do I want to have my own restaurant? Is it feasible? Or, you know, so the big, big picture stuff, I'm holding off on, and my sights are set on becoming an executive chef.
Are you looking around here in the Lakes region, or are you looking somewhere with a little bit more population?
So I moved to New York earlier this, well, when did I move here? In August, I moved to New York for that reason. It's just, you know, as beautiful and wonderful as Wolfboro is, and I'll always, always love Wolfboro and the Lakes region. It just, for the growth of my career, there really isn't a ton of opportunity. So I made the decision to move to New York in order to explore some more job options and sort of jump around and try different things and grow in my career.
Now, according to one of those articles that evidently you weren't interviewed for, it says here you're working at a hotel in Montclair, New Jersey. I'm not going to mention which one unless you want me to.
Yeah, I work at the MC Hotel in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay. Which is, that was where the Sopranos were set, suburban New York.
Say again? I'm sorry.
That was where the Sopranos were set in Montclair.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So you get to see all those things that you saw in the TV show, you know, in the opening of the TV show,
Turnpike. That's their, like, pride and joy. That's the thing anybody from Montclair tells you. Like, oh, did you know? I'm like, yep, I know. Somebody told me 5 minutes ago and 5 minutes before that. It's funny, though. Yeah, they're the Sopranos thing.
Tell me some of the differences between working at Wolf's Tavern and working at the MC Hotel.
It is... I think I have tried so hard to, like, replicate the camaraderie and the family that we had at the Wolf's Tavern in my other workplaces. And it just, I think that that's really the big brazen sort of difference between Wolfboro and other places that I've worked in other states and other communities. I also worked at Burnt Timber Brewing and Tavern in Wolfboro this past summer as well, and they're really great friends of mine. And from what I understand, every kitchen in this town or every workplace in this town just has this really very wholesome, caring family camaraderie that I fell in love with, and I've been trying to sort of duplicate that, and it's just nothing's ever quite been the same. But it almost might be for the best, because I can keep those memories from Wolfboro very, very special, because they can't be repeated.
Well, maybe you'll come back for a summer or a couple of weeks in the summer.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking with Nikki Hanna, and Nikki is a Hell's Kitchen contestant right now, season 19. The show will air tonight on Hulu, as it aired last night on Fox. I got to ask this question. A lot of people have texted me, some of my friends, and said, you got to ask this. Being the first couple of shows, you were up for elimination. I can't even imagine what that feels like. I'm not even sure I could have remained standing. you know, can you walk us through how that feels?
I'm so sorry the first part of that, because I lost service. I had to go.
Ah, okay. No, we're talking about being up for elimination.
Oh gosh. Well, I wasn't really up for elimination.
It's right. The second episode, they had nominated you, but you didn't go up.
Yeah. So being nominated obviously is not a feeling, as I think that you can imagine. But I knew in that scenario that I wasn't likely to be going. I knew that I performed well. You know, I said, well, this is kind of BS. I don't understand why they're nominating me, but whatever. I'll go in. But you still, you know, you're shaken, because you never know what's going to happen or what decision he's going to make. But I was thankful in that moment that he said, are you kidding me? Are you crazy? No, you cannot nominate Nikki. And then he picked two worst performing chefs. That was a big release.
Yeah, that was a twist I had not expected. And it's funny, because I remember yelling at the TV, no, not Nikki, not now, no. And my wife is like, what are you talking about? I said, she's from Wolfboro. Oh, well, in that case.
Good to have people cheering me on from home. I love that.
And then they all the chefs come back, you know, for the finale, which, well, not all of them, but most of them do anyway. Mm-hmm. Are you asked about that, or is that part of the deal?
So I think... correctly, it was in our contract that was a possibility. Obviously, not all go back for the finale. I think in previous seasons, if the top 10 of the season are invited back to come in and be in the final brigade for the top two contestants.
Okay. I do have a question about people being eliminated, if you don't mind. You know, so does everybody pack their stuff before going down to see Chef Ramsay, who makes the pick? Or do you, you know, is everybody ready to leave at that point? Or after you make the walk of shame there, you get your stuff and leave?
So we didn't pack. I mean, I think in previous seasons, there's been instances of people packing where they go down for elimination, and that's kind of a no-no. Like, it shows that you're prepared to go home. So, but frankly, we were truly unpacked in the first place. We didn't have a lot of closet space. So if you see, like, in the room, our suitcases are just kind of on the ground, and we're, like, living out of our suitcases essentially. But when somebody gets eliminated in the show, a productionist will go and pack their bag and bring it outside for them.
Okay. Always curious, after watching, you know, 18 and a fraction series of seasons of the show, why do so many chefs smoke? It would seem counterproductive.
It is definitely counterproductive, and also really does a number on your taste buds. But it's a very stressful job, like you said. And then also, I think our brand is also just much more susceptible to any type of addiction just because of the nature of the people who are attracted to this job. You know, we are, like Anthony Bourdain said, we're sort of the pirate, a motley crew of misfits, you know? So I guess that's probably, I would say, why the majority of line cooks and chefs smoke. Also, you can't just say, like, oh, I go outside for fresh air for 5 minutes. Like, your chef would punch you. You can't do that.
Right.
But if you're smoking a cigarette, then you're allowed to go. So I think that it's a good way to get 5 minutes to yourself if you need it.
Was being younger than most of the other contestants an advantage, a disadvantage, or both?
Oh, boy. Probably a disadvantage. I would really love to be able to say both or that advantage, but I don't think for this application it was. I was really green. I was a lot younger than the people that were there, and obviously the absolute least experienced. And so it sort of came in. I didn't know that was going to be. I really had no idea what I was walking into, frankly. But then when I arrived and I realized that I have 17 very talented chefs with a long tenure, you know, have years on me and experience, it was definitely intimidating. And I think it took a lot of work to overcome their doubts of me based on my age and based on my experience.
As most people who watch the show know, the sous chefs this season are previous Hell's Kitchen winners. Christina has been around forever, and I forget the name of the other gentleman who was also a Hell's Kitchen winner.
Jay Santos.
Yes, Jay. Does that make it easier for you? Are they people that you can talk to because they've been there where you are?
Yes. So they're definitely hard on us. Don't get me wrong. You know, they definitely.
Oh, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to piss off Christina.
I would never. She yelled at me a couple of times. It was horrifying. I loved it. She's amazing. But yeah, at the end of the day, they're there to support us, and they also have been in our shoes directly. Like, they know exactly what we're going through. So. I really can't speak for the blue team. I didn't get to connect with Jay because he was their sous chef, so I didn't really cross paths with him very often. But I can say that Chef Christina was a really, really great resource for the red team.
That's terrific. Now, she, of course, has gone on to astronomical success thanks to Chef Ramsay, as have many others. Do you think you can too?
I certainly hope so. You know, it's hard to figure out or even imagine what the possibilities are at this point. You know, we filmed this over 2 years ago or almost 2 years ago, and it's finally coming out. So there's been a lot of there's been like a hibernation phase of, you know, my dreams and possibilities sort of have been incubating, and now I'm going to see what's going to come to fruition and what's going to happen as the show goes along, and, you know, see what opportunities come my way.
One of the other things that you're into, Nikki, is chefware. Yellow Jacket Chefware is the name of your company?
Yes, it is.
And the first thing, and maybe because I don't wear chef jackets, what's different about chef jackets between genders? I mean, isn't a jacket a jacket?
Well, frankly, that mentality is kind of the thing that I'm combating.
Okay.
So right now, the difference between gendered chefware is not much of anything, but there are some very distinct differences between men's bodies and women's bodies.
True.
And so far, there really hasn't been a workwear chefware company that has taken that into consideration. And I've always been really frustrated at how my chef coats fit and the fact that they're just baggy and huge and rectangular and see-through and just not there really is not a good viable option for women's chef coats, especially for plus size women, or, you know, there's nothing that's size inclusive and affordable and is beautiful and sleek and professional looking. So I decided to make them myself. And, you know, of course, you start a business and you have an idea and you're like, yeah, this will be great and it'll be easy. We'll get it done in a couple months. And it always turns out to be a lot more work. And not that I'm complaining. I'm learning so much in this process, and I'm getting ready to send out my first PR packages and samples, actually to my teammates from Hell's Kitchen to sort of get their reviews. And then I will be putting these bad boys on the market, finally.
That'll be, and of course you'll have those wonderful contacts to help you out as well.
Yeah.
Why the name Yellow Jacket?
So I like bees, first of all. I think bees are very, very important, and which they are, just to like the sustaining our planet. But then I always think about what it means to be a woman in sort of a male-dominated industry. And I feel like when people think about bees, they think about like, oh, queen bee, which is just, you know, men work and the queen sits down and does whatever. Yellow jackets are actually wasps. They're not bees at all. They look like bees.
Right. I'm allergic to them, actually.
They look like little worker bees, but they, they're more fierce than, you know, I think it really is just the notion that we're here to get our job done. We're going to be seen. It's fine if you're scared. Like, we're definitely not going to hurt you if you just leave us alone and let us do our job, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think that being a chef, at least based on what I've seen, is that a game for the young? I mean, what happens when you get to 50 or so, or the idea is to raise far enough that you're not cooking on the line anymore?
I think that's always the goal. The only thing that comes to mind, I think, of the Wolf Tavern former executive chef Hope Wilson, who he still works for the company. So he, I believe, wanted to sort of, you know, start thinking about retiring, but he still really liked his job. So he just moved up and became the corporate executive chef. So he distanced himself from the hustle bustle and, you know, doing line cook work and stuff like that as he gets older. And I think that's the goal for everybody. And that's sort of how I imagine my future being. Is, you know, you work and you cook on the line and you train your staff and you're in the kitchen every day until you physically feel like you need to, you know, step back, and then you move up.
Okay. We're talking with Nikki Hanna, and she's a contestant on Hell's Kitchen 19. The show airs Thursdays, 8 p.m. on Fox, and on Fridays you can watch it on Hulu if you are one of those people that so many, like so many others, don't have cable or satellite TV in your home, since around here there's no Fox affiliate to watch over the air. One of the other questions I had is, what does an executive chef do?
Oh, my God.
I mean, I would assume it's a management position, but, you know, most of us don't know.
So, there are countless responsibilities of an executive chef. It also varies from restaurant to restaurant. So obviously this is a generalization, but the responsibility of the executive chef is to manage all things food and beverage most of the time. So they create the budget, they adhere to the budget, they order product, they hire staff, they audit themselves, and somebody just walked by me. they audit their staff, they audit all of their paperwork, and then on top of doing all of the background work, all of the paperwork, all of the budgeting, all of the payroll, everything, they also oversee their staff, train their staff, manage the kitchen, and they write the menus, they cost the menus, meaning they decide, you know, you have to break down every piece of the puzzle, every ingredient that goes into a dish, and the figure out how much it costs you to make it and then how much you charge for it. They do special events. They answer to their general manager. It's just, it is more work, I think, than anybody could really imagine. You think chef and you think, okay, they're in the kitchen, they're cooking, and that's it. That is not it.
That sounds like a very, very busy job. The hours must be very long.
Yeah. So it's sort of accepted in our industry that especially if you're a sous chef, sous chefs are said to have the but basically they get the short end of the stick as far as hours go. It's accepted in our industry that sous chefs and executive chefs are working 12 to 14 hour days every day on salary. So, you know, your salary, let's say, covers 50 hours a week and you're working 75, 80 every week. There's a lot of sacrifice that goes into working a job like this in our industry.
Well, I mean, if you want anything, I mean, in my business, too, you know, you make sacrifices to get what you want and to chase that dream. And it looks like you're definitely well on your way to doing that.
Absolutely. I'm trying my very, very hardest. And, you know, certainly, especially right now, because of the state of the world, our industry is really struggling. And I think it's been extra challenging for people. You mentioned earlier that there's a shortage of line cooks. And I think that's an example of a lot of people who sort of bailed. You know, we had plenty of line cooks, and then COVID happened, and we all got laid off, and a lot of people just didn't come back because it's not really viable right now to make a living working in a restaurant for some folks. So it's been really challenging lately, but we're all willing to sacrifice and stick it out to the end and find a way to fix this and get better and get the people their food.
Right now, at least where you're working now in a hotel is, you know, they have the hotel for revenue, and it's more than just a restaurant. So you've got that financial support there.
Yeah, I'm very I'm lucky to work for the company that I work for and to work where I work. New Jersey is at 25% capacity still, so you know we're dealing with the same challenges as far as getting butts into seats as every other restaurant, but we do have this ability, thank goodness, because we're a hotel and we also have two restaurants in the building. We have a rooftop bar and we have the dining room downstairs. So we have more options, I think. So I'm definitely grateful.
Let's look at that a little bit more. Can you give me your job title at the hotel?
I am the lead cook.
And what does that entail?
It entails, we have a really small team right now. So mm-hmm. normally it would be, I run the line for dinner service and, you know, support the line cooks and, it's all kitchen related stuff. So I'm not in like paperwork land yet. I guess that's the best way I can describe it.
So are you running the pass like Chef Ramsay does?
Well, right now, because it's such low capacity, we don't really have anybody running the pass.
Okay.
Because we don't, so everything's really weird right now. So it's hard to describe everything inside a restaurant kitchen right now is so not typical and not normal and super weird. It's really hard to like put a pinpoint on what technically my job is right now because we're all doing every job because we have, you know, very few staff members, and we're all sort of having to pick up the slack and get everything done with very few hands.
Well, that I understand very well. It's WASR. We're talking with Nikki Hanna, the Wolfboro resident who is now working in suburban New York City as a lead cook and is well on her way to greater heights in the culinary world. I want to go back to Hell's Kitchen for just a couple of minutes. Did you get along well with most of your other contestants?
Yeah, I got along with everybody. They, you know, you see what you see on the show, and obviously editing is a thing, and there has to be, you know, there was heads, you know, people butting heads and all this stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, there's 23 hours and 15 minutes more of the day that you're watching than what you're seeing. You know, you're watching 45 minutes of an entire day.
Right.
So everything really should be taken with a grain of salt, because in reality, we're all still friends. We have a group chat. We talk nearly every day.
And this may sound like a really stupid question, but what happens to the diners if Chef Ramsay throws you all out of the kitchen?
So they know when they come to the restaurant that it's possible that they may not get their meal.
Ah, okay. So
they know what they're signing up for.
Okay, I get it. And from what I understand, it's very difficult to get a reservation. I would love to get one myself someday.
Yeah, I think my grandparents were telling me, they were like, we're going to try to get a reservation while you're out there filming. And I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen, guys. I don't think you don't just call. It's not like Applebee's. You just call and say, I'm going to get a two-top.
Right.
No. Okay. Very exclusive.
Yeah, it is. And I guess the question, it's kind of an obvious question, but I need to ask it. All in all, how valuable of an experience was competing on the show?
Incredibly valuable. And I didn't really realize how much it was going to alter the course of my life and my career. I really didn't know what I was getting into, and I really can't even describe how important this was for me, especially at that stage in my career. It seemed like it was too early or too soon, and I was too young and I was too inexperienced, but I have to sort of disagree with that notion and say that it happened at the perfect time, and it was like truly the kickoff of my career. It really emboldened me and made me feel very validated that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
So so the stars kind of aligned, and you got your break, as it were.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's fantastic. My guest this afternoon, Nikki Hanna, again, she lived in Wolfboro, now lives in New York, and is competing on Hell's Kitchen, again, 8 o'clock on Fox on Thursdays and Hulu on Fridays. Nikki, any shout-outs or anybody you want to say hi to here in town?
Oh, my God. I want to say hi to Haley and Eric and Jamie and Tyler and my mom. I could sit here and list everybody who lives in Wolfboro, but I won't. I love you guys all so much, and I miss you, and I'll come visit as soon as I'm allowed to, because COVID is crazy.
Yeah, it's I'm getting real tired of the words, and then COVID happened.
Yep. It's hard for me to be away from my family, and then I can't even go back and visit, because I would have to come back to New York and quarantine and miss work, and like, it's just so complicated. But I miss my friends and my family, and it's not that far away, you know.
There are a lot of people here in Wolfboro. I see a lot of New York plates, New Jersey plates, Connecticut plates. I'm wondering.
They're coming to Wolfboro to like hide out.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And it's kind of funny because there's more people here than are usually here in the winter. I mean, it's not crowded by any stretch of the imagination, but there's definitely, I think, more traffic here. Nikki, again, I really appreciate you taking the time. It was very generous of you to do that. I know that you're a very busy person. Again, thank you for making time to talk to WASR.
It's my pleasure. I had fun. Thank you so much for reaching out.
Happy to do it, Nikki, and all the best. That's all the time we have with Nikki. However, if you'd like to hear the show again or missed part of it, you can download the show as a podcast on our website, WASR.net. Again, thank you very much for being part of the show today, and we will talk on Monday with Police Chief Dean Rondo on AM 1420 and FM 97.1 WASR.